Mike Ruth joins us on Sports Byline. He played his college football at Boston College before being drafted in the second round by the Patriots. He's an inductee into the College Football Hall of Fame, and he was a defensive lineman who won the Outland Trophy as college football's best lineman, and he led the Eagles to three bowl games, including a win in the 1985 Cotton Bowl against Houston. You grew up down in Pennsylvania. Tell me a little bit about where you grew up and your high school football career.
As a little kid, I grew up right outside of Dallas, Texas. So I think I learned everything that was great about America right there. I think everybody ought to almost do 2 years in Texas just to feel good about America. And then, high school years, moved up to Philadelphia, which, you might characterize as the city of brotherly love, where people reach out and touch you. They just don't always ask permission. A little bit more of a rougher place, but again, blue collar, real hard working people, and fighting is part of the culture, but fair. It's from Joe Frazier to, the Rocky movies. It's very much steeped in church, being tough, being a man, being good, and being hardworking.
You know, as they say about the fans in Philadelphia, they go out to the airport and they boo bad landings. And I always laugh when I hear that line. But what is it about that blue-collar image that established the town that way, is from their fans and the way they expect their athletes to play?
I think it's a tough place. The weather's cold. It's often miserable. You have your steel plants. You have your coal mills. You have your factories. The work is hard. And you have a big influence on the church. And it sounds like such an odd combination. But it's almost like from birth, I guess if you're not steeped in wealth and privilege, and I'm not slighting anybody, you're steeped in your word counts. And when tough things happen, you better be tougher than those tough things. And then when you're done all that, you better go to church. And I think that's what builds that whole scenario. People with very strong convictions, and they try to be very good people, very good family people, and get them on a family picnic, and it's like the best crowd you'll ever want to be with.
Mike, when you were watching games for the Phillies or for the Eagles or even for the basketball team, what athletes did really stuck out to you that you admired, that you, wanted to look up to?
Well, Montgomery, who was a running back for the Eagles. Ron Jaworski, is a big Polish, Irish, German, and Italian were the big populations of the day. And Bill Berge, on defense as well. I used to love those guys. And then there was Tim McGraw and Steve Carlton. The Flyers were the bullies. A continuation of all the same. But when we wanted to watch an NFL game and win, we had to drive 6 hours to Pittsburgh.
The one thing I've always heard, and I think you'll agree with this, Mike, and I talked to some of the Pittsburgh Steelers about this, Pittsburgh is also a blue-collar type of town. And I said, did you guys take on the personality of the city that you played in? And I found that to be the case. I mean, you mentioned about Dallas. I'm out here in San Francisco. I've always found teams take on the personality of where they play. Did you find it to be that way also in Philadelphia?
100%. 100%. It's the culture. It's the fans. It's the everything. And I'll say one thing. I mean, the fans will boo a boo. They'll throw Coke bottles where they shouldn't. But, boy, do they respect a good opponent, too. And if a team comes in there and they're really hardcore and good, well, they'll be talking about them for the next week, too. So it's kind of an even assessment. They just hope that their side comes out, favoring what they like to look for.
How did you end up at BC?
Oh, that was a riot. I was fortunate to go on a number of trips, and I went to Arizona, which was the funnest time, the funnest recruiting trip ever. And I'm not – Arizona's a wonderful school, but I'm for accuracy. And I just had a blast. And, I'd come back, and my mom was ill. She was an invalid. And I was concerned about, how am I going to be able to do the two things, go to school, still be in shooting distance if possible. If you gotta be home and all. And you know, I got a phone call, and they suggested a way I could do that, and I didn't think that was a proper way. And then, you know, I had asked what their graduation rate was, and they said, well, we worked very hard on that. And I said, sure, that's great. I'm sure you do, but what is the graduation rate? Well, you know, we put a great deal of effort. I said, I'm sure you do. What is your graduation rate? And they said, well, if you stay for 4 years, you have a 34% chance of graduating. And I want yipes. Okay, I can't miss on this shot. I'm going to have to take care of my mom at the time. And I called up BC, which was the worst recruiting trip in the world. We got a sub sandwich. They drove us around in the rain, said, look at all these fancy buildings. This is a great laboratory. This is a great science building. This is a great library, but they're all closed. I watched a movie that was the worst movie ever. I think it was Neighbors. And I got a six-pack of Coke, and I went back to the hotel room. And that was my BC trip. But when I asked what the graduation rate was, they said, if you participate in one freshman practice, one, you have a 93% chance of graduating. And I said, is the offer still there? And they go, yep. I said, I'll take it.
Your kind of school, right?
Yep. you know, no, once again, no messing around. I think we had one fluff course in the 4 years. And, you know, the rest, you're competing with some really bright students from around the country, and you really gotta hustle. You don't have any. There's no slack there, that's for sure.
Let me ask you about Jack Bicknell, who you played for at Boston College. My impression of him, and correct me if I'm wrong about this, he was kind of like a throwback coach. He was kind of a little bit on the gruff side. There's only one way to play football in his mind. You played for him later on, of course, over in Europe. With the Barcelona, with the Dragons over there. Am I correct in that observation of him?
He was the best coach, in my opinion, I have ever seen in the sport of football. The best. And it bore out because his sons went into coaching, and I believe two of them are also in the NFL ranks. And it was very much keeping with the way I grew up. He was very direct, and he basically said this. He said, when you recruit somebody, find something in their background that demonstrates character. And I don't care if they fit all the measures and the markers, but if you've got something that shows character, then offer them. And that's how you got a 5'9" Doug Flutie and myself and many others. And his deal was, listen, I'm going to be fair. And I'm going to promote the players as much as the team. You know, your names are going to be on the back of their shirt, so don't embarrass yourself. If you're tough, if you give it your best, if you do not shy away from anything, well then, to my best ability, I'm going to be promoting the players too. And it was important for him to do that. You know, it was important to develop them personally so that they could do the best that they could do. And there was no phony baloney. You know, there was none of the coach speak where he'd say one. No, if he said something, that was it. And if you were hardcore and you were going to show up and you were going to give it your best, then you're playing. And that's how we got 22 of us on the Cotton Bowl team. And I don't know too many colleges that, you know, could do this. Or do this often. I mean, maybe Alabama these days and some of the SEC teams, but back then for BC, 22 players from one Cotton Bowl team went into the NFL for a year or more. And not one of us had started with the big Notre Dame scholarship or USC scholarship. We just figured we had to be better and tougher than any two other players. And we thought it was such a great opportunity to have a chance to play football. And they're going to pay for our education. Are you kidding me? It's like, to us, we won the lottery. Man, we owe everything back. And it worked. And that was the type of guy Coach Bicknell was. You could trust him. You could count on him. And he was fair. when he was tough as nails, too.
We only have about 30 seconds left, but was he a rah-rah type of guy in any way?
Oh, God, no. No, he was a cowboy. You know, his nickname was Cowboy Jack. It was okay, saddle up. You know, now go do it, and I don't want to hear a complaint. You better get it done. But you were prepared to do that job, so you got it done.
Hold on just a second. Mike Ruth is with us. Again, he played his college football at Boston College. He was also involved in one of the most exciting ends of a football game, and we'll talk to him about that. We'll also talk to him about his pro career, brief, with the New England Patriots, but he also played over in Europe as well. And also, the College Football Hall of Fame, by the way, is going to be inducting Mike. It's located in Atlanta, and the 2017 induction ceremonies will take place on December 5th in New York City at the 60th annual National Football Foundation Annual Awards Dinner, and fans can watch that show starting at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN3. We continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on Sports Byline. Mike Ruth is with us here on Sports Byline. We're talking about his outstanding career in college and also his time in the National Football League. Brief, as I indicated, with the Patriots. What did you expect the National Football League to be like, and how was it similar to or different from what you thought?
I expected it to be the cherry on top of the dream. And it is, and it was, and it is all that. Having never gotten hurt, ever, to get hurt at the very start of my career, that was a shock. To then re-injure the same injury two more times, that was heartbreak. But, you know, it's everything that you could ever want. I mean, just picture you have a reason to be in a really bad mood. And you just drank two cups of coffee. And now they're going to put you in this little box, and anybody you hit is the right person. And you get cheered for that. I mean, I don't think it gets any better for a guy. That's a wonderful situation to be in. But when you get injured, it's very difficult. You know, you're playing against the top caliber of athletes in the country, and now you've got a limited basket of tools that you can use. And a limited basket, you can still play. You know, came back twice and ran down on kickoffs, had a number of knockouts, but I had no posterior cruciate ligament in my leg. And to this day, every 100 step, you know, it comes out the back, and the next thing you know, you got of 2 liters of fluid on the lower part of your leg. And it's very frustrating.
Was it also accentuated by the fact that you were the Outland Trophy winner as the college football's best lineman? And I think when somebody is named anything, there is an expectation that goes along with it. Was that also part of the dynamic of this situation?
I think it was dynamic, but that was one of the great parts of it. You know, in the preseason games as a nose tackle, I think they had two or three sacks, you know, which I was thrilled with, because, you know, you go from having, you know, over 10 in college, and you say, geez, I wonder if I can do this here, and you find out that you can. And, you know, the tempo is much quicker, but the time to prepare is longer and better. And it's the ultimate contest. It's, you know, like being, I don't know, you do your favorite hobby and you get to play with all the best of them, and you can. There's really nothing, in my opinion, nothing like it. I think had I not gone on special teams, and I talked to Pat Sullivan years later, and I said, you know, why did you put a 285-pound nose tackle on the kickoff team? And I think had I not done that, I think I would have played for a long time. But, you know, you make some good decisions, and sometimes you make bad ones.
You also spent a couple of seasons with the Barcelona Dragons in the World League of American Football. Probably some of our younger listeners didn't even know there was a league by that name. But it was an interesting experience. Teams would send players over there to get them a little more seasoned, or they're over there to kind of rehab a little bit. What was that experience like?
Wonderful. It was great. You know, Coach McNeil had called up and he said, hey, Mike, we look like a spaghetti strainer against the run. And I said, Coach, I can't run anymore. You know, I can't turn or twist or do any of those things. And he said, well, that's okay. Can you just hold up the middle and just stop all the runs through the middle? I said, sure, I can do that. You know, if you have a good heartbeat and you're tough enough, you can certainly do that. And so he brought me over there with a fellow named Bruce Clark. And Bruce was a great, great, great player. And after about a month or two there, I realized that, Coach, are we really here just to, like, watch the younger players to make sure they don't get out of hand? And he chuckled. But, I mean, that was pure fun. That was like having recess time over in Europe. You know, you weren't going to be, you know, matched against the best of the best, but you saw some really great talent, people up and coming in talent. And you got to see a foreign country, which was fantastic.
You and I were associated with two of the greatest endings in college football. Mine was when I was doing the play-by-play for Stanford. It was 1982. It was against the University of California. I think you know where I'm going with this one, Mike. And, of course, Stanford, they took a lead with a field goal late in that ball game. In just a couple of seconds in the last play of the game, the ball was lateraled all over the field, and, of course, Cal won it. There was some dispute, but the thing I was always proud of in calling that game was that I had seen out of the corner of my eye across the official down the line toward the goal line signal end of the game, because he was looking down the line, and he saw the running back when they were lateraling it with his knee down on the ground. But they kept the play going, and, of course, with 15,000 students and people on the field, there was no way they're going to reverse the end of that game. So that was my moment. And then you were involved, of course, in 1984 with the BC team, with Doug Flutie as the quarterback, and the last final play with that long TD pass to Gerard Phelan. Tell me a little bit about how that led up to that and some of the key moments in that game.
It was so supercharged, you know, to go down. When you had Doug as a quarterback, you always thought you're going to be in any game. And to this day, one of the best, greatest people that I've ever met in my life. And you can picture the most pressure-packed moment of the most intense meeting, intense game. And he'd be in that huddle just saying, hey, Gerard, just do this little thing like this, just like you're in the backyard of your neighborhood. You know, and get everybody in just the right mental spot. But you're going down there. Jimmy Johnson is the coach. Vinny Testaverde is the other quarterback. Highsmith is the running back. I mean, you looked at their team. They had probably 10, 12, 13 very notable, you know, NFL players coming out of that. And it's no understatement to say, here we are at BC, and we're looking at it and basically saying, okay, we're going to have to go out there and try to knock out four or five people and just beat them to death as best as we can physically and hope Doug pulls a miracle. And it was really just that game. It was a heck of a contest between the linemen. And I've run into some of the Miami players since then, and we chuckle. We run into each other because we both sides, man, we threw everything on the field. And you run into them years later, and you say, hey, that was a great defensive game, wasn't it? Oh, yeah, we only gave up 4,000 points and 20,000 yards. You know, but it was like that. And to see Doug do that, it's just – it was the upset of the upset. It's here you got a, you know, more of an old-fashioned type dynamic at BC. You got, you know, overachiever, tough kids, a lot of Northeast kids, a little bit of talent, a little bit of speed going against, you know, the U with all the speed, with all the coaching, with all the facilities, with all the talent, with all the everything. And who's going to win?
Yeah.
And just to keep it, you know, in that, keep it that close, and then to actually win. It was like a Walt Disney movie. You know, everything that you could imagine actually happened.
We got about 2 minutes left, and in that year, the year before, Miami was the national champs. They came into that game ranked 12th. You guys were ranked 10th with an 8-2 record. Here are some of the things that happened in that game. The Hurricanes' Bernie Kosar passed for a school record 447 yards. Miami running back Melvin Bratton ran for 4 touchdowns. Flutie passed for 472 yards and 4 TDs, and he became the first collegiate quarterback ever to surpass 10,000 yards passing in his college career. He won the Heisman Trophy that year as well. Is there any one element of that game that is etched into Mike Ruth's mind that he'll never, ever forget?
Anger. just anger. Just we went down with the attitude, we're as good as you, and we'll beat you if it's the last breath in our body. And then, you know, try to beat Doug. Try to catch him, first of all. I mean, I tried to catch him all year long during practice. He can barely touch the kid. And he's only 5'2", and you still can't catch him.
It says something about his heart and his determination, doesn't it, Mike?
It sure does. I had an old theology professor that said, what's the difference between a big sinner and a little sinner? Opportunity. Well, Doug had every opportunity for everything, and he was as class act as he was in high school, as he was in college, as he was in the pros. And that type of character is it spreads. And we had 4 or 5 people that had that same character kind of charisma. You know, so whenever we went anywhere, we always felt that it was our job to do something great because we were so darn lucky to be here.
In about 30 seconds, that is the type of game, is it not, Mike, that one who was involved in a game like that will never, ever forget? It is something very meaningful to them on a personal basis.
Absolutely. You know, it's the American tale. They say we're ranked this and ranked that, but, you know, a group of hard-nosed, again, blue-collar, confident, faithful, charismatic people, can make a win anywhere and beat anybody. And that always goes down to me as that story. Even if maybe that wasn't the way other people saw it, that's the way we saw it, and that I'll never forget.
Mike, I want to thank you very much. Congratulations on the Hall of Fame. Take care.
Thank you.
Mike Ruth, again, played his college football at BC, inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. We've got you on Sports Byline.